Welcome everyone to the Apocalary Podcast. I'm Steve Hees.
Larry.
You know, we've talked about this.
Haven't it's we talked Dr. about Larry.
It's Dr. Larry. It's
Dr. Reverend Dr. Lawrence Bendy.
Yes. Why? Because we're all Team Larry. Remember, we're Team Larry.
With the big L on our forehead.
Oh, I like that. I like that. The L's will be awkward, but we'll wear them. We'll wear
it
them
with pride. I think it stands for lactose intolerance.
Team lactose. Folks, thanks for joining us again on this journey. This week, we're going to talk about Revelation 17. If you're looking in the ESV, it has this ominous title, The Great Prostitute and the Beast. So, you know, maybe a little bit of an odd start here, the ESV kind of gave us. So, Laird, do you want to do an introduction? You want me to read those first two verses, and then we'll do the introduction that way? Or
Let's go with the first two verses.
All right, folks, again, Revelation 17, out of the ESV, here's verses 1 and 2. Then one of the seven angels who had the seven bowls came and said to me, "Come, I will show you the judgment of the great prostitute who is seated on many waters, with whom the kings of the earth have committed sexual immorality, and with the wine of those sexual immorality, and with the wine of those of whose," sorry, see, I can't read the English language for crying out loud. Let's try that again, shall we? "And with the wine of whose sexual immorality the dwellers on earth have become drunk." So, interesting imagery, right? There's a connection back to the seven bowls.
Yes.
But the angels off and going, right?
Well, yeah. One of the seven angels, of course, you don't know which one, and it doesn't matter. Remember, the seven bowls, we are certain the seven bowls took us to the end of time.
Right.
You know, he said, "It is done," right? And then he has the plague and the hail that falls on people. And now he comes back and he's going to talk about God's judgment on the beast and on this woman on the beast. In the next chapter, it's going to be the fall of Babylon, right? So over 17 to 19 is this punishment of Babylon. That's what he's bringing around now.
Okay.
So one of the angels who had the seven bowls said, "Come, and I will show you the punishment of the great prostitute who sits on many waters." So I don't think he was saying she was a great prostitute.
That would be awkward.
Yeah, the whole thing is rather awkward, right?
Yeah, yeah.
But this great prostitute now is eventually you're going to find her riding on the beast. So we're going to talk about who she is. She sits on many waters, and this is one place where even the very literal people like Walbert. And Walbert, whenever you have rivers or seas or oceans or anything like that, Walbert will say, "A river is a river, a stream is a stream, an ocean is an ocean, sea is a sea," right? This time he says, yeah, I can see that they're not talking about water here. She's not sitting on water. This is a political expression. So the prostitute, referring to the prostitute as a political expression, the water she sits on are peoples and languages and tribes. And they actually come out and explain that a little bit later on. They see it outright that these are people. So this prostitute is, no, I'm going to say it's Rome, but you're going to find out people are going to say all kinds of different stuff about who we're talking about here. Mm. But the whole thing is a political structure where people are buying in to the wealth that joining with a powerful nation brings you. You join with a powerful nation, in this case I think it's Rome, you join with a powerful nation, you're a smaller nation, and you're gaining your wealth from that nation. So she's the prostitute. I was going to say you're prostituting yourself, but that doesn't quite work. They're the prostitute, and you're joining in the harlotry.
Okay. Okay.
You're buying into this world system if you're a symbolic person.
Yeah. Oh, I get you. Yeah. Okay. Okay. Should I keep going all the way down to 6 then?
Yeah. So, and that's what they refer to by being intoxicated by the wine of her adulteries.
Makes sense.
And you want to be careful with this, but if you're Canadian, where do you go if you want to make it big?
Yes, exactly.
You don't stay in Canada if you want to make it big. You go to Los Angeles.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, or if you're a country music singer, you go to Nashville.
Right, you know? Right.
Yeah.
So, like you said, the futurist preterist folks must be pointed, they either must be pointed directly at the U.S. or you have to be pointed at some other world power that is drawing all other economies into it and all other nations into it, right?
Well, that's right. And if you're symbolic with this, then at this point, they're picking up whichever nation happens to be powerful. You know, for a while, it was China at one point in time, and it may be China again, right? At another point, Japan was building power, South Korea was building power, right? Sure. But at this point in time, it's still the United States. Even though, is that gone now, Steve? We're still there, right?
I would think.
Trump's going to make them great again. You know?
Yeah, yeah. They've been made great for a whole year now. And yeah. But once you think that would kind of fit, if you're going down that road, that's the road you're going, I mean, the U.S. is the only model that fits for you right now.
At this point in time, it is still.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you know what? I want them to like us.
Because
our army is very well trained, but it's very small.
Yeah, that's right. I would happily take the shielding of no. Okay.
So verse 3-6, I guess, eh?
All right, I'll pick it up at verse 3. And he carried me away in the spirit into a wilderness, and I saw a woman sitting on a scarlet beast that was full of blasphemous names, and it had 7 heads and 10 horns. The woman was arrayed in purple and scarlet, and adorned with gold and jewels and pearls, holding in her hand a golden cup full of the abominations and the impurities of her sexual immorality. And on her forehead was written the name of mystery, Babylon the Great, mother of prostitutes, and of the earth earth's abominations. And I saw the woman drunk with the blood of the saints and the blood of the martyrs of Jesus. And when I saw her, I marveled greatly.
Isn't that incredible, eh?
Even how John ends that, to say, yeah. I marveled greatly, like, he's not disgusted by it.
Oh, okay. Yeah, he's astonished.
He's astonished by it, right? Yeah. I'm not saying he's celebrating it, but it's almost like he's in awe of it. Is that a bad way to put it?
Well, I think that's a good way to put it. And I like the way he does this. Before we try, when you get into trying to figure out who the woman and the beast are, then everything starts to fall apart on you. But if you just look at the image, you know, he's in the desert. Normally the desert is a good place. But now he sees this woman and she's sitting on a scarlet beast. So scarlet could be royalty, but it could be blood. Mm. You know, why are you a scarlet beast? Well, because of the blood of the saints, right?
Right.
And that's what's coming up. And she has these blasphemous names written all over. So everything about her is opposed to God. That's the whole idea of the blasphemous names written about her. She is completely opposed to God. She has the 7 heads and the 10 horns, which have been mentioned a few times through here, right?
Right.
You know, the 7 heads, that was the representation of power. The 10 horns are each one of those horns is power. 10 is a limited number. Now, some of them will get a little more literal here, and they'll point to Rome, and they'll talk about the 10 provinces of Rome.
Yeah.
Some will talk about, at one point, I think futurists talked about the 10 countries of the Commonwealth when they did this. So some people see a literal 10 in here.
Okay.
And some just see the 10 as a limitation of power.
Okay.
But this woman, now, when he gets back to the woman, that you know, this prostitute, they say she's dressed in purple, which is royalty. She's like, beautiful, right? Purple and scarlet. Just gorgeous stuff. She's glittered with gold, and she has precious stones and pearls. She sounds like a starlet in the Hollywood on the walk.
Right,
on the
right.
Red carpet walk. You know, walking in with the beautiful gowns that they spend so much time with talking about now. Wearing the pearls, wearing the jewels,
right?
Wearing the gold. Everything about her is gorgeous.
Right.
But look what she carries in her hand. You are absolutely gorgeous, and you're walking with a cup, a golden cup, and your cup is full of filth, right? And the filth are these abominable things. And I don't want to get into present day stuff, but it's hard not to, isn't it?
Right.
It's hard not to get into what is peddled upon us day in, day out.
Right.
You know? And what we are willing to adulterate ourselves for.
Yep.
I want to say even Christians, but then let's not do that here. Let's just say there's so much going on in the Roman world, right?
Right. Right.
And then if you want to be present about it, you could say there's so much going on in our world. There's so much filth that is in these beautiful trappings.
Right.
It's like Jesus said, you know, you're like whitewashed sepulchres. Very similar kind of an idea. You look nice on the outside, but there's nothing but dead bones and garbage inside you.
Right.
Same with this woman. This is what she's bringing. She's bringing all of the filthy things of life with her. Mm-hmm. And people are buying in.
Yeah.
We're buying in wholesale. And this is written on her forehead. Now, you got to figure it's either got to be small letters or she's got a giant forehead, so, which may take away from the look. Mystery, Babylon the Great, you're the mother of prostitutes and the abominations of the earth. So you are like the mother of all prostitutes. This isn't saying you're the oldest one and all the other ones came from you.
Right.
It's saying that that you are the greatest of them all. Like, when we're looking at you, we are looking at the prototype for the abominations of the world. You are the prototype. And who are you? You're Babylon. And who is Babylon to John? I'm still thinking Rome, even though people make a very good case for that being Jerusalem. Because Jerusalem was often called the harlot as well.
Right.
Right? And so I'm still going to point to Rome, but that's where they go. And look what the harlot does. She's drunk with the blood of the saints, with the blood of those who bore the testimony of Jesus. So you're looking at Rome, right? And maybe you're looking at Jerusalem, and what are they drunk with? They're drunk with the blood of the saints. Rome was the one who was starting to turn the Christians over. Now, remember, we're hundreds of years still from the Colosseums and from the catacombs and things like that. So we do have straight up persecution and death of Christians here. The Romans are killing them. The Jews are the ones that are turning them over. Remember, you are of the synagogue of Satan.
Right.
Because they were turning the Christians over.
Yep.
They're saying, we have religious freedom, the Jews are saying, but they are not us. Right? And so you can punish them.
Yep.
So that's the thing that's going on here. And as you said, Steve, John is astonished.
Yeah. Yeah.
But he says, I will explain to you the mystery.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, then, how far do you want me to go here, bud? Do you want me to go?
2:8, I guess.
Okay.
That looks like a break that they've given us.
Nice. Okay. But the angel said to me, why do you marvel? I will tell you the mystery of the woman and of the beast with the seven heads and the 10 horns that carries her. The beast that you saw was and is not and is about to rise from the bottomless pit and go to destruction. And the dwellers on earth whose names have not been written in the book of life from the foundation of this world will marvel to see the beast because it was and is not and is to come.
Yeah. So so who's this beast? This is the beast of 13, isn't it?
Oh.
Most will say, yeah, this is the beast of 13. This is the, remember you had the dragon, the beast of the sea, and the beast of the land. This is the beast of the sea. And this is the one that died and came back to life. So then we get, was this Domitian? Because Domitian, some felt, was the revival of Nero. I've heard different things about Domitian. I've also heard that Domitian really wasn't that bad a ruler. And maybe in some ways that was worse, because then you're kind of lured in. You know, but I've heard it, you know, the redivivus of Nero, that was there as well. Okay. And the inhabitants of the earth. So he's going to go to the instruction. The inhabitants of the earth whose names have not been written in the book of life from the creation of the world will be astonished. right? So all of the non-Christian people are just going to be amazed by what happens to this beast.
Right.
Yeah. So, and it's interesting too, it's that this happens in different places, right? Here, the Christians' names are written in the book of life from the creation of the world. In other places in Scripture, your name is entered into the book of life. This one, it's always there. So a little play on, you know, free will versus the sovereignty.
Yeah. Go team go team Calvin, go team Arminian, right?
Yeah. You can do that. That'd be quite a football game, wouldn't it?
Yeah. It's.
And then he comes back to the mind of wisdom, which, remember, he called for a mind of wisdom in chapter 13 when he did the number of the beast.
Right.
Now he's calling for a mind of wisdom again. So it seems like when John does this, he's pointing to something that their church knows that we are not privy to.
Okay.
Right? It could just be, you know, if you're smart, you'll get this. But it sounds more like, you know, we've talked about this stuff before.
Yeah.
And, you know, and unfortunately, we weren't there, so we didn't hear it. It wasn't a TED Talk.
Yeah, we cannot watch that sermon online. Well, let me pick it up at verse 9 then. This calls for a mind with wisdom. The seven heads on which the woman is, the seven heads are seven mountains on which the woman is seated. There are also seven kings, five of whom who have fallen, five of whom have fallen. One is, and the other has not yet come. And when he does come, he must only remain a little while. As for the beast that was and is not, it is an eighth, but belongs to the seven, and it goes to destruction. And the ten horns that you saw are ten kings who have not yet received royal power, but they are to receive the authority as kings for 1 hour, together with the beast. These are of one mind, and they hand over their power and authority to the beast. They will make war on the Lamb, and the Lamb will conquer him, for he is the Lord of lords, King of kings, and those with him are called and chosen and faithful.
Yeah. So before we fall apart in this section, we're just going to note that at the end of this, they try to make war against the Lamb, and the Lamb overcomes them.
Yeah.
Right? You just can't. You can't beat the Lamb.
Yeah.
You know? You can't fight against Jesus. He will overcome you. Yes. Now let's go back. So this calls for a mind of wisdom. The seven heads are the seven hills on which the woman sits. And remember, what city sat on seven hills?
Isn't that Rome?
Rome. Rome sits on seven hills, right?
Yeah.
So we're pretty sure he's talking about Rome here, because it is the city on seven hills. You know, Rome was considered, they did consider it Babylon. You know, this is the revitalization of Babylon.
Right.
But some still say this is Jerusalem that they're talking about. And how does Jerusalem sit on seven hills? Well, if it's the woman sitting on the beast, and the beast is Rome, then the woman is sitting on the beast on the seven hills. That's the way they kind of...
I get you.
Yeah, you're going to play games to make anything work here.
Yeah.
Now, these seven kings, here's how... I'm going to read this because I can't ever remember it. So there's different ways that you put the seven kings. Like, some people think the seven kings are seven emperors of Rome.
Okay.
All right? So one of the ways they do it is they don't start with Julius Caesar, because he wasn't yet an emperor. He just kind of, he was the beginning of this thing. So they start with Augustus.
Okay.
Right? Julius's adopted son. Remember the son of God?
Mm-hmm.
The idea of calling him the son of God, that's what they called Augustus.
Oh, okay.
And Julius Caesar was God, and Augustus, one of his plies for the throne was to say he was the son of God. And all of this son of God stuff started with Augustus. So here's how it goes. It's Augustus, Tiberius, Caligula, Claudius, Nero. And then they've got three little emperors of Rome that didn't do much. Sounds like my time as a president of a school. Galba, Otho, and Vitellius. Vitellius sounds like a hair product to me.
Yes, I'm wearing it right now. Can't you tell?
Yeah. Can't see it, but I'm wearing it. Those three kings, they will drop them out. They'll leave them out, and then they'll pick it up at Vespasian. Now, Vespasian was the emperor 68 to 79. So he was the emperor when Rome fell. Mm. For he was fighting, or when Jerusalem fell. That's the fall of Jerusalem in AD 70.
Right.
And then for a short time you have Titus, and they all include him, and they'll do all of this because that ends in Domitian. So if you want Domitian, that's how you do it. You ignore those three and you end up. The other way they'll do it, if they want to end with Nero, is they'll go Julius Caesar, Augustus, Tiberius, Caligula, Claudius, the contemporary one at the time of writing, and then they go Nero, right? Mm-hmm. And then a short time is Galba, and the eighth is just some representative of the emperors. So that kind of works for you, kind of, if you want to land at Nero. It doesn't really, but it's
close. Yeah.
And this eighth is just a ruler. Now a lot of the futurists who accept this kind of a scenario, they will they'll then say, well, that eighth is the coming Antichrist in the future. So they'll still let the Roman guys have it, but then they'll still point to the future. Hmm. And that's kind of the way they do it. The other way the futurists do it is rather than do Nero and all those guys, they pull it together and they do the regular kingdoms. Sorry for stumbling there for a bit.
No, you're doing fine.
Yeah, and the fallen empires in John's day were Babylon, Assyria, New Babylonia, Medo-Persia, Greco-Macedonia, and then you end with Greece, right?
Right.
And then you have Rome, and then some of them will point to Daniel's image, and they'll say, and then the ten kings are the ten toes on Daniel's image. Remember his feet of clay. So they're kind of minor kings, but what they do is they add their power to Rome. So if you look to the future, it's a minor, it's a kingdom, and you have these minor kingdoms that add their power to the kingdom.
Right.
Happens
all the time, right?
Is that all you're going to say now?
Yeah, that's all I was going to say. Yeah, it happens all the time. Well, it's like they become vassal states, right? You know, for lack of a better.
Oh, I like that. Yeah, the vassal king thing. That works.
Yeah. Yeah.
With the suzerain king and the vassal kings.
Yes.
From our old days of intro to some kind of history.
Yes.
Maybe it was intro to Old Testament or something.
Old Testament survey. It did you and I in.
Yes. It did help us a great deal.
Yes.
And of course, then it fits because it says the ten horns, you saw the ten kings who have not received their kingdom, but will receive power for an hour. That sounds like a TV show. The Hour of Power. Do you remember The Hour of Power?
Yes, that's right. I remember The Hour of Power.
Yeah. I don't remember who did it, but they have one purpose. They'll give power and authority to the beast, and they'll make war against the Lamb. And, of course, at the end of this, the Lamb defeats them.
Yeah.
So a part of this you can make perfect sense of, right? The beast, there's a woman sitting on the beast. She's horrible, but she's gorgeous, right? And it doesn't talk about physical beauty. It just talks about wealth when it talks about her. There's all these wealth things going on.
Yeah.
And that points to just about any country that's ever been dominant and had a lot of wealth.
Right.
Everybody tracks to that country. That's where you make your money.
Right.
And that's exactly what's happening here. And of course, with this wealth, what does she do? She crushes the saints, and it's the blood of the saints. Are in there again, the death motif that goes all the way through this book.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah,
and these kings, no matter how you do it, whether it's nations, I still see it as Roman emperors that they're talking about, and it points directly to Rome, and that's what John has in his mind.
Yeah,
but remember the symbolic guys, they see a fulfillment of this many times through history.
Yeah,
and that works, doesn't it?
Yeah,
I mean, this kind of thing has happened many times through history.
Yeah.
But
I like where you went with that too, because John is talking about what he's seen and applying it to what he's seen, not just in the spirit, but also in front of him.
It was odd. I was talking to someone the other day, and they said, I've been listening to your podcast, and you know, the more I listen, the more futurist I become with this whole thing. And I thought, well, that's kind of odd, because the more I read, I don't become a futurist. I become more symbolic the more I read this thing.
Yeah.
And yet, very solid on the Christians are suffering and the world is making them suffer and they will pay the price for this.
Yeah. Yeah.
But God, in all of his punishment, is trying to turn the world back to him.
Yep. Yep.
So now we're on verse 15.
All right. So 15 to the end here, folks. And the angel said to me, the waters that you saw where the prostitute is seated are the peoples and multitudes and nations and languages. And the 10 horns that you saw, they and the beast will hate the prostitute. They will make her desolate and naked and devour her flesh and burn her up with fire. For God has put into their hearts to carry out his purpose of being of one mind and handing over their royal power to the beast until the words of God are fulfilled. And the woman that you saw is the great city that has dominion over the kings of the earth.
So you can see that those that see this being Jerusalem, and it works out really well, right?
Right.
Jerusalem's trying to cozy up to Rome a little bit, and she's going to pay the price. Like, she paid it in 70, but if you go past 70, you get to 132, to the Bar Kokhba rebellion. And there was a crushing of the Jewish people during that rebellion as well. There were several rebellions along the way, but that was with Masada, if you've ever heard about Masada.
Right.
And that rebellion as well is just a massive rebellion, and so that's why some see it as the prostitute of Jerusalem. I've always seen the prostitute as the Roman religious system. Where my view falls apart is I don't ever remember the emperor going against his own religious system. I don't think that ever happened. So then I'm kind of struggling at that, right? Hmm. But the prostitute, for sure, whoever is supporting Rome here, she's going to be turned on, and they're going to destroy her and leave her naked. The image here is Jezebel, by the way.
Yeah, right. Makes sense, because that would also be familiar to all us readers too, right?
Yeah, they like that stuff, right? You know,
yeah.
Throw her down. And I said, throw her down again.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
When they were done, there were enough pieces. No, I'll stop there.
Yeah. But it's also interesting, don't you think, in 17, where he says, God put this in their hearts to do this thing. So, it's, you know, this is God saying, I'm now pushing my judgment out towards the prostitute as well.
Crazy thing, isn't it, Steve? I think you're right. I think, like, you've got nations rising against nations, and it's all still on the fingers of God. Mm-hmm. You know, men think they're so powerful,
right?
And they're not. I see people do this, and they're acting so powerful. I say, you know, you're the president of a tiny little Bible college. Like, why do you think that there's so much power there? You know. And it keeps going that way. You know, you're the president of a university in Canada. I mean, you're not that big yet. You know, you're the prime minister of a very small country. But then it keeps going, right? You know, you're the president of, you know, of the, all of the United States. But how big are you in God's sight?
Yeah.
And how much control do you have?
Yeah. Well, it's funny. I heard an interview with Barack Obama, who said one of the things that was so hard for him to grasp was how little power the president really had.
Ah, yeah.
Where he said, I thought I could do this, and he realized, no, I don't have that power. I don't have that power to make these wild changes that maybe many think I can make. You know, I can do a few things here and a few things there, but...
Yeah, because everybody reports to somebody.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, when you're the president of a place, you discover that you're completely obligated to the board.
Yeah.
And in a democracy, I mean, you're obligated to everybody.
Yeah.
And you can do everything right, but if someone can turn the people against you, you've lost.
Yeah. Doesn't this come right back to your message, where you've driven us a lot of times, Larry, where it says, you know, God is still in control of this. John is trying to assure people that God is still in control. Even though they're suffering, God is the one that's... His purposes are being carried out simply because he wills it to be.
Yes. Yeah, I like that, Steve.
Yeah.
I like that very much. That circle that we gave right in the beginning, right?
Yeah.
You feel so small, and the Jewish people are turning you over to the Romans, and the Romans seem to be in control of everything, but I'm trying to tell you, God is in control of everything.
Right.
The Romans aren't in control. The Jews aren't in control. You're not as small as you think.
Yeah. Yeah.
Unless you think you're big. And then he might say, and you're not as big as you. Yeah. But this prostitute, it's kind of tough imagery for some of us, you know. And just the whole idea of prostitution in the midst of this. Later on, they're going to talk about of selling people and slaves and souls of people that Babylon will do.
Right.
And that is just a part of being a power in this world as well.
Yeah.
But God is in control, as you said.
Well, yeah. I mean, I think that's where you start is off on a good foot, my friend. And we just keep seeing that message through and through.
Yeah.
You know, God's in control and he's still calling people back to him and they still keep rejecting him.
Yes. And when are we going to wise up? One of my teachers, I liked it very much. And he said, even though we're Christians, he said, we're functional atheists.
That's an awesome statement.
So next week we talk about Babylon a little more specifically.
Okay.
And Babylon is Rome.
Yeah.
Or whatever country you choose it to.
Yes. Babylon and Botswana.
That's right.
Maybe not Botswana.
But we're a little careful now to not say it's the Catholic Church. Very few of us are going that direction anymore.
Yeah.
Even though we did for a while. Now, I've never had problems with the Catholic Church. I've never been oppressed by any other church.
Yeah.
So maybe there was a different view at one point than there is now.
Yeah.
For that reason. So.
Yeah. Well, and wouldn't that be also, you know, again, if you're at that symbolic point of view, it's really hard to make the Catholic Church work here, really, right?
You're right. Yeah. I know it fit those guys in the earlier days, and they would say, well, it's got to be the Catholic Church, and they always point back to the Spanish Inquisition,
yeah.
You know. But if we remember the Spanish Inquisition in those days, and when you come further from that as well, the Catholics were killing people.
Sure.
But so was everybody else. The Lutherans were killing the Anabaptists, too, at one point. And in their minds, they had very good reason.
Yeah.
You know, the Anabaptists were pacifists, and you know who wants them around if you're in the middle of a war, really.
Yeah.
And so that was the struggle they were having. But you know, the Pentecostals and the E-Free, we came along in a gentler time.
That's right. We gently mock people.
Yeah, we do it for criticism rather than.
I'm going to pummel you with timbits. Okay, before I go too far, folks, thanks so much for joining us. Larry, that was just good stuff. It's good stuff. It's like you and I were talking right at the beginning, a very hard chapter to work your way through because there's so much imagery, so much that is, like you said, all the scholars are going, I'm going to give it a 42, but I'm not sure I can dance to it. So, you know, off we go. But anyway, thank you so much for leading us through this, my friend. And folks, next week, you know, it'll probably be a week or a little bit before we record again. But next time you join us, we're going to be talking about, I know, get this, Revelation 18. It comes after 17. That's why we're going to talk about it. And like Larry said, we'll go into a little more depth on the great prostitute, which is Babylon or Rome. So until next time, I'm Steve. He's
Larry. Dr. Larry.
And Dr. Larry. And we will see you next time on the Apocalypse Podcast.